I feel you're generally known in the industry for Finshots and Ditto.
Yeah.
And I also feel both of those things have money at the core, or finance at its core, at least the way I'm thinking about it. So if we can explore the idea of, like, to begin with, what does money mean to you? The relationship that you might have with money. Was it scarce? Was it enough for you? Or just a few thoughts on that.
Yeah, so to be honest, money for me, was always a means to, experience new things. I never saw it like, as a way where, you have more money, you call yourself rich, you don't have, you call yourself poor. That definition-wise, I never saw. I mean, scarce, etc. Of course, you don't. When you, when your expenses are very high and your earnings are not matching, of course, you are in a scarce condition. No matter what is that, right? If your expenses are pretty much sorted, you're saving something. You can call yourself content and rich. I mean, it's all about how you want to, what kind of state of mind you keep, right? So that's a very pretty subjective thing. But
Sorry, just to
yeah.
stop you there. In the sense that, I'm not really sure about that. In the sense that, I feel like there's something like objective rich. I mean, I understand the logic of, people can live in like one room and, they have their three meals taken care of.
Correct, correct.
But I don't feel like that is objectively what you would probably, let's say, call somebody like a well-off person. I don't know. It also, to some extent, I'm not even sure how much of it is just like rationalization that, that they're in that position and they've kind of rationalized and kind of staying there. I don't know.
That is true. I mean, it would be pretty stupid or maybe, not very rational to say that they might not be looking at some, some rich folks, their assets, and might not be craving or aiming for that. If that is happening, I mean, either we went to some monastery or something, right? So you're right by that logic. My relationship, as I said, right, I always wanted, of course, to make money. Of course, that is there. My expenses were always very high. I was never a saving mindset guy. And no matter, and I was into this, credit cards, fintechs, whatever new is coming into the world of this finance, etc. Whatever I could access, It's a decade old thing. 2014, 2015, I started my journey. When I started earning for the first time, I entered stock market because, of course, I wanted to, make more money, you can say, be more independent. So you can say more, I see money as independence. I related money to be more, be like more, give that gives me more independence. I could go anywhere, do anything. I don't have to worry with for the paychecks or, EMIs, etc. So with me, I feel the simple way I look at money is it can buy you freedom. That's it.
Do you think you're financially independent now?
I mean, again, it boils down to the same logic, I mean, whether you want to buy more things, right? If you have those aspirations, then you are not. I would say I'm not then. Because let's say I want to do few more things. I mean, I won't say like I have changed much, but definitely my expenditure has definitely moderated. But yeah, I mean, I still aspire for, things that I always wanted to, I mean, experience. Just as I said, I see money more as a, a measure, a means where I could experience new things. Maybe let's say, you buy a cool car, cool watch, you want to go somewhere, maybe, other country, you want to explore somewhere, right? So money will help you with that. So financially independent, you would say, I would still feel, it's a question, it depends on my aspirations. If I stop thinking about all that and I just start living like, okay, I don't want to, buy any new things, I just want to live a moderate, and I would say, okay, I'm financially independent. So it depends on those choices that I want to make, right? But as of now, if you ask, I am not, because I have aspirations.
have you noticed any correlation between like one thing which is I think hotly debated or thought of is a relationship of happiness with money, right? Have you noticed that relationship where you tend to get more happier as you accumulate more money, or you know, buying
so
of things?
That's a very good question, by the way. I always think about it, and I always believe in that. I don't want to be at a position where I have everything, but I still feel I have nothing. So I always made this mindset that 95% of worldly problems can be solved by money, but those 5% is all about expectation management. So as I said, I mean, you can have a cool car, but there is always something new coming up. You can always crave for something, you know, and it never ends, right? So I mean, through that way, you know, what you're asking is not just happiness. Happiness is also one form of contentment. If you're content, you are happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to achieve that contentment, I feel, you know, money definitely solves a lot of the part, right? But rest comes from your, how you, you know, keep yourself, how you, you know, how you have sorted your life, your state of mind, your expectations, how you have moderated your things. I mean, you can call it a more, whether you have adopted a minimalist way of living or you just want an extravagant way of, I mean, it depends, right? So I feel happiness, definitely money solves a lot of problems, but not all of it.
Mm-hmm. So just on the expectation management and, you know, setting the right state of mind per se, are there any specific things that you might do to maybe get into that state, or just having an outlook on life, right? Like as you might accumulate more money, or just the way you live your life.
I think the best way to get into that state of mind is asking yourself again and again, why do you want to buy this? First asking yourself whether you really need it. Do you really need it? You ask that question multiple times. And are you buying for yourself or for others? Right? Whether you want to just do it because your friend has done it, your neighbor has done it, or you are doing because it solves a very specific critical utility problem for yours, right? That question you have to ask yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is no, it doesn't solve a very big, and you can still survive, right? I feel you should not buy that, right? I mean, that is the first way how you can, you know, manage those things. Now, let's say there are a lot of things where you want to have a, you know, sense of security, right? You want to feel big. No, you feel big. I am pretty big, right? Like
what does that mean?
Let's say you feel like, oh, I want to own like a lot of assets, a lot of bungalows. I should have something in, you know, overseas as well. Let's see if you feel like that. I also used to feel like that, right? But right now, if you ask me, I have changed. Now I feel, why do I really need that? You know, what problem does it solve for me? You know, it doesn't. In fact, it gives you more headache of taking care of all those properties as well, right? Oh, how is it? Who will manage it, right? It in fact adds a lot of extra burden of responsibility on you. You're not, I mean, you wanted to have more free time and you have freedom. It actually is ironical. I mean, it doesn't go that way. It will add more pressure to you. Of course, you can manage it some or the other way. But again, coming to that question, right? Whether you really need it for that one vacation, or let's say, you know, going for just show off something, whether you really need it, right? If you really want, say yes, no, I want to show off, let's say. Not show off would be a right word. I want to be, you know, have that feeling that I have so much.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, why not? You have money, you can hire managers, or let's say a lot of, you can do that. But yeah, I mean, I personally felt that this is not something what I want. I would like to have a life where I have, you know, minimal things that I really need. It makes life very simple. And since I am running a firm, time to time, you have to make a lot of decisions, critical decisions. And I want to make those decisions in a very free state of mind, rather than having multiple decisions forced upon me, on my head. Oh, I have to do this also, do that also. It just doesn't work. I don't want to be in that state. So yeah, I prefer to have like make one or two good decisions, one to three good decisions, right? Not a bunch of it. And if you add more assets, etc., it tend to have we tend to take more decisions. You have to do it. So that is one way I started thinking, right? You know.
Have you thought about what made you make that change from, let's say, you know, initially you spoke about how even you wanted to.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would have, you know, seen and followed a lot of people who are already, you know, at a very good place, etc. That they used to tell, but it's not that relatable. I couldn't relate at that point of time. Definitely, there was a cue. I could have taken a cue, but slowly, when my was mine, you can say, you know, let's as you get slightly successful, your lifestyle also improves. You try to buy things, and you see, yeah, that, you know, that aspiration never ends. Now I had a good phone last year, which was working very fine. But I was like, no, I want to buy an iPhone 14 now. I should buy it because it's cool, let's say, right? So, and next year there will be iPhone 16 or something, let's say, whatever comes, right? So that I feel it's never stopping, yeah. I mean, I basically you can say self-realization. I spent a lot of time talking to myself, you can say, and say, yeah, it's actually not something, you know. Working out, I mean, you just tend to spend too much, and you know, you curtail your freedom. Or freedom, as you can say, you know, it's also one way related to, you know, you can say the investment part. When you see that, you know, I was a very hardcore spender, you can say. I mean, you just want to spend anything you like, right? Even it comes through credit card, I will do that. But that's not a good thing, because you know what I mean, if that money would have, you know, kept in some certain asset class, it would have grown. Of course there is pros and cons. I mean, I experienced so much, etc., through that, buying those things, or let's say, you know, like getting into stock market was such that kind of a thing only. I just wanted to trade when 2015 I started. So definitely, I learned a lot of things. I lost also quite a bit of money there. But yeah, I mean, it depends where you draw the line. That's, you know, where you can. Right now, I'm at a state where I feel, you know, it's not needed. It's not needed. I mean, I feel it's better. I keep things very simple. Back then, yeah, you have a lot of time. Also, you have to understand that. Right now, you have a lot of responsibilities, right?
Okay.
So that also plays a big role.
So let's, if I can get into that, in the sense, I feel like you're in your early 30s or mid 30s.
Early 30s, yes.
Yeah. Mm. In that sense, how do you think, you know, you kind of alluded to this earlier, you know, life was simpler back then, and, you know, right now, too many responsibilities per se. So how do you think life has changed in your 20s versus now, you know, in your 30s, early 30s?
In my early 20s, I was in college, etc. Let's say, if after college I had a job where I used to take up myself earning money, and you were just using your money, and you know next paycheck will come. You work, get your work done, and that's it, right? It was a pretty solid, simple life, you know. You earn money and you just spend it. Nothing to worry. There was no thought of, you know, I mean, you can say, oh, I have to, you know, invest, save, all these kind of things. There was no such thing as that back then. You were very young, you wanted to spend a lot of, get to experience, because there is a zeal of exploring the world also at that time. So I used to travel a lot, you know, that's how the life was. Now if you say, I feel it's a little, you know, I have gained so much of knowledge, you know, whatever experience I had last few years. I feel life has changed in the sense of, you know, I got more responsibility. Like, let's say back then I didn't have to worry about my parents. Now my dad passed away, so I had to look after my mom. Yeah, she lives with me. And so, yeah, it tends to make you more feel responsible, right? You feel like more settling down, etc. All that kind of thoughts starts kicking in. So I feel it's more like a automatic, you know, age-wise change that you feel that. So you were surrounded by the folks in the early 20s when you were like, everyone was similar. Now you're surrounded by people who are working somewhere, well settled, etc. So it by default changes everything. So yeah, that's why this change has come, I feel.
You have been involved in the startup ecosystem, I think, is it fair to say, a decade now? Or I don't know.
5 years.
5 to 7 years. Five years. 5 years. How do you think it's evolved over the 5 years you've participated in it?
Sorry?
How do you think it's evolved?
The startup ecosystem, to be honest, I mean, it has evolved crazily, I would say, because back then, 2018, 17 times, Jio was just launched around, I think, 16 and November or something like that. And 17, 18, you know, still those startups were, you know, figuring out this Jio boom was still carrying on, right? There was no so much of digital penetration back then. I don't see, I mean, there were a lot of, you know, boom about this YouTube influencers, etc. I don't think there was a time where it was happening. No, hardly I could say there were, you know, few YouTubers who were doing things, and influencer marketing, etc. was not something, you know, that gung-ho that was going on, right? So once this digital penetration where tier 2, tier 3 cities, everyone started having a smartphone, you know, I mean, this changed how every startup founder or every startup wants to reach out to their new base of audience, right? It gave a new pipeline. Initially, what used to happen? I mean, to just open a bank account also, some sales manager, relationship manager, offline thing, a lot of used to happen. But now it's started to fade away slowly. You know, it's more online. Even the KYC thing used to happen, all that. Of people used to come, take a signature, and, you know, DMAT account. The biggest evolution was, I think, stock market. How do you open a DMAT? I also filled so many forms, signed it, and then gave it. Now it's just a click away. You can just click a few buttons and, you know, just submit your KYC, online KYC, and it is done. Aadhaar KYC happened. A lot of these processes become so efficient. I don't have to go somewhere, because going somewhere is itself a big task, you know. So yeah, I mean, crazily back then, I think only Flipkart, Snapdeal, I remember, were the few startups. Ola, all those were in the booming that time, 2014-13 kind of. I'm talking about these were the only handful of startups, and becoming a unicorn was a big deal.
Once Jio came into the picture, was that like a propellant for you to maybe? Did you start thinking about starting a startup because of Jio or anything like that? Nothing like that, is it?
Never. It was, see, I wanted to be an entrepreneur, I think maybe way back, since my childhood, like it was like that. I was ambitious always. So wanted to do something, but you need those cues, those resources, which I feel I got when I joined IME. I figured out there was a scholarship out there. We, you know, and convinced few of my friends to join with me, and we together started. So I feel it was never because of, you know, Jio boom, etc. Even if that would have not happened, we would have done something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not about that. It was just because I always wanted to, you know, do something into this space. That's it.
I think I've heard you say people or team is like 90% of the startup, you know, building the right team.
Mm-hmm.
Or having the right people is like almost 90% of the startup, you know, idea and all comes later.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on that? Like, why do you think it is so important?
Okay. So trust me, when I started, I was having zero idea how to do startup. I was not reading any books. I was not following any entrepreneur. In fact, I never read any entrepreneurial books, etc. How Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, I never did that. I just started right off the bat. Now, when I was reading a lot of the resources in Y Combinator, etc., I was just trying to understand, you know, how to do this, because we already decided to do a startup, right? A lot of people were saying, okay, you know, idea is also important, execution is important, but it's more like, you know, when you read it, let's say I used to read these Sam Altman and Paul Graham blogs on Y Combinator. They also say the same thing, you know, founders are like your wife, they will be with you all ups and downs, you know, you have to, you know, be with together and etc., all this thing. But you cannot experience it. It's just you read it. And what I did, one thing that I did, I used to read that blogs every 6 months.
Just reading.
Always.
Okay.
And I felt, oh, this is so relatable now. Because it was not relatable right off the bat, you know. Now, while we were with my friends doing the startup, I can clearly see that we wanted to do something. Now, we all together, you know, if let's say disagreed on some points, right? And the startup, who is the startup? You, just 3-4 people, that's it. We together somehow figured out a way to come onto a, you know, common point where all of us could agree and resolve that conflict. Not conflict, I would say, resolve that disagreement. And those disagreements were so important, because otherwise you tend to do just something that you like. That is a common problem. That mm-hmm. when I also started, I always wanted somebody who say no to me.
What do you mean?
If I am suggesting something, right? What generally happened when I was searching for people to join me was people were like, okay, we will do. And see, whatever I say, they say yes. Because saying yes will not involve a lot of thought.
Mm-hmm.
Saying no, you need to come and answer why you are saying no. You have to defend your no, right? It requires a lot of thinking. So I was very clear that, you know, those who are actually thinking will be the ones, you know. I mean, completely just saying yes, yes. I still follow that philosophy. I mean, it's just because you are not growing that way. I need other points, or you can, you know, a way of thought, way of thinking, or you can say some other way how I could, you know, grow my thoughts, right? I want somebody to tell me, you know. And I made sure that that no should not be something that I should take personally.
Do you think disagreement is much more easily achievable with close friends?
I mean, it's very subjective to say that. Like in my case, it was very easily achievable because, yeah, we mostly disagreed on everything. I mean, even if you ask one of a professor, in fact, in the just a presentation, we were disagreeing each other. And the professor was saying, how come you guys will do a startup? You guys are not even agreeing on the one point. So it's very important and not easily achievable, I would say, because close friends also don't want to hurt each other's sentiments.
Correct. Because I think that's something even I can relate to. Like, I was just doing this mental exercise whether I can disagree very strongly with my best friend, right? And I think I would hesitate a little bit.
See, I was reading, not reading, I was just, I just saw one article about the, this Zip 2 of Elon Musk startup, where he onboarded a friend of his and he was very brutal while he was working with his friend, right? And that friend backed out after a while and he said, hey, either I could be your friend
or your employee.
I mean, whatever you say at that point of time, because he was not okay with that relationship. So it's a different relationship. You cannot bring, you know, friendship there, because it's a matter of, you know, a big stakes are there, big stakes are there, right? How could you, you know, you cannot just say yes. Otherwise, all of us will fall.
So I feel, again, this might be the way I am approaching things as well.
Mm-hmm.
But one pitfall that I feel I see is, I don't know, egos getting hurt and people don't not like not being bossing around.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
It took me years to learn this, how to not take things personally and to get off your ego. I mean, just set aside your ego. It's very difficult.
It's very difficult.
Luckily, my friends are blessed with that. They don't have. But I was not blessed enough. So I have to, you know, work a lot on myself. Ask myself, why am I getting? Because, sir, it's just feelings. Feelings are like clouds. It will just go away. Right, ego, etc., whatever, these are feelings. You have to be more mindful. It took me some time, but I figured that out, that how to be mindful, you know. And you definitely get hurt for sure, but when you ask the question, why am I getting hurt, and the practice itself will make you a better human being, I would say. So that is what is important. So even if the feelings are getting hurt, there are ways you can shape your, you know, argument that it might not sound harsh.
Right.
That is one way. Other ways, of course, I mean, you put it across, you know, you clearly tell that this is back up with some rational and logic or data. Why would people, ideally when there's data like last month only we had a meeting where, you know, there was once place where we were not doing good, right? Now, people owning that division will feel very bad because they are not doing good, right? And now, if they're not doing good, there are chances that, okay, we will not proceed ahead with that division. You will feel bad. The division will feel bad. But that's the truth. And data is there. There's no such animosity or, you know, there's such, you know, war kind of thing, or you are my enemy. There is no such thing. It's clearly backed by data. So you cannot, you should not take it. It's easier said than done. But
yeah.
What I'm saying, that's how it works.
So there are two things, right? You and your friends are obviously more enlightened than me, but I always used to think that, and I think I still carry this with me even now, like if somebody who's my peer would tell me something, I would be like, mentally at least, what the fuck, man? Like, we were in the same class, now how come he knows more than I do? And I think that ego getting, not letting me learn from other people, so I think that's a huge...
very, very important.
That's a huge...
That is a very big problem, you know, a lot of us face, because we tend to, you know, keep ourselves, we tend to stay away from them, you know, we tend to put ourselves off, you know, no, we will not interact. And that puts a stop, a barrier in our learning. You are very correctly saying, you know, that learning stops happening because you are not being with those people, you are getting envy of them.
Correct.
Right. So again, I mean, this is what I felt is a common human nature, and the only way to solve it is to practice and get enlightened. And you're correct. It's a very valid point. And I would clearly say I was on the similar boat when I also started. It took me years to think again and again, you know, controlling my emotions, not saying things right off the bat. You know, you think about it a little more. You know, you basically... give up. Let's say I have this way of, you know, sleeping on that thought for a day before even, you know, doing
that is
something.
That is underappreciated, actually. Like, sometimes...
So, I mean, I feel great things are actually some of all those underappreciated things, which actually turns out in the long run to be, you know, highly appreciated.
I mean, I cannot tell you the number of times I have typed in a very negative message or an email, and fortunately, I tend to sleep over it, at least give it a day.
It happens.
And the next day, I'm like, fuck, was I about to write and send this?
It happens. So, see, a good learning would be like, you know, life is a great leveler, I feel. I mean, even if you didn't like somebody's comment, maybe after a year or a few years later, you might feel, yeah, that was not even needed. Why to burn the bridge, right? So when this strong thought holds your, I would say, center of your brain, right, before doing anything, right? I mean, you kept a check that before doing anything, that thought needs to get passed by the check.
Mm-hmm.
You will tend to do better. Like, don't burn the bridge. Just let it go, right? And you effectively see it compounds over the time. That positive energy compounds. Because, as you said, if you would have sent it, you might have felt, oh, I released those negative energy.
Correct.
But it actually coming back to you.
Correct, correct.
So, never do that, I feel. I personally also worked on all those things. So, I can relate to all this. So, it's very common. I don't see people should feel bad about it. It's very common. It can be tackled out. It's a therapy, I would say.
So, I just want to digress a bit. This is reminding me of... So my boss used to tell me, so I used to talk to my boss about all this, and so he would tell me, whenever you're getting a criticism, like, just focus on that criticism or that area of criticism.
Yeah.
And it's not a value judgment on your whole person. Like,
correct.
We are not judging you as a person, just the work or the area that you're being criticized. And that helped me like a lot.
So we do a lot of sessions, I would call it a morning sessions with all of our employees, where we talk about all these behavioral aspects. Recently, I showed them a video of a guy from a TEDx video who, I forgot the name of the guy, but he had this problem of having a lot of ego, right? And he wanted to tackle that. What he did, he decided to, in his in weekends and when he was free, participate voluntarily to become a referee in a football match, which would pay him £20 or something like that. That's it. You know, he was earning well, everything was there for that. £20 was nothing to him, but he was still going to do it. And why he said why did he choose? He was not even interested in soccer, but he chose to do become a referee because every now and then you see people will blame referee, right? And he felt ki this entire process will help him to get more enlightened. It's not about me, you know. Mm-hmm. People will say ki, hey, you don't know, you are just here to, because he wanted criticism at that. He wanted to tackle himself, he wanted to enlighten himself, grow himself in his thoughts. He played all those matches in the, you know, as a referee. He people used to say, hey, just get off this hobby, you know, you are the loser in your life and all that. People used to tell him, right? But then he again gave a good thought on it, right? Why people are saying it, right? It's not about him, you know. He was not some legacy referee or something, right? It's because people want to win, right? That's why they are saying it. So he became more, he started asking questions. Why are they telling? They are not telling me. They are telling the event, what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He started becoming more sympathetic, you know, when people started saying so many things. So he, in this whole process of that TEDx video, what he, you know, explains that when you start thinking it's not about me, somebody honking back, you know, your car, you get irritated. Hey, why the hell that guy is honking so much, you know? Who knows? You know, just ask question, okay, maybe he is getting late for something. He desperately needs to go fast, let's say. The moment you think, that anger went off, you know? So thinking about, it's not about me, you know, giving other person a good chance, a thought, automatically helps you get away with the feeling of, you know, it's not about me, people are not, you know, it's that ego part, what you said, you know, that criticism, etc. You'll just focus on that criticism because of this rational factor. In the same video, in the last, what he does is a very good experiment. He crumbles a 20 pound, okay? Ask how many of you wants it. Everybody says yes. He puts the 20 pound in the bottom. He crushes with his shoes. How many wants it? Still people wants it. He put his mouth, spit on it. How many wants it? A few people still said yes. Why do they want it? They said because it's still 20 pounds. So the moral that he wanted to convey with this analogy was, no matter people say so many things about you, spit at you, crush you, defeat you, but you will still have your value, right? So it's very important to see things in those lights.
That's a good analogy, actually. I have not come across that, but the core of your value still being there no matter what external factors might do to you, that's a very powerful.
That's how you deal with criticism.
That's
how you deal with criticism.
But that's very difficult in the sense that I feel like some people, I think I have this problem where internal sense of security is not very strong, and you're always like looking for external sources of validation, and that can always cause like.
You are right. Basically, you are saying what you are saying. I would explain in my words. I mean, more milestones and achievements you have in life, more confidence you get. Right. Let's say if I would have failed in this whole endeavor of doing a startup, I would have myself felt like a loser, maybe. Not just me, you can hear Sam Altman saying that nobody was more focused about his failure more than himself, right? Nobody cares, he was caring himself, right? So those milestones are important, and with that, I think you build those confidence and wisdom where you could tackle those. Even if that's not there, I feel it could be done, it can be done through a lot of practice. When I say practice, right, it involves at least interaction with such elements or such kind of sources of information. That's the first stepping point. What that guy in the TEDx video who became a referee said that, right? Later on comes, you know, putting those learning on information in real life. Let's say I will tell you my basic example. When I started interacting with such kind of information, before that I was always ready that, okay, before that light turns red, I have to cross it. Even if it's yellow, I will just rush it, right? I was like, no, I'm getting But when I start asking questions, I mean, it's okay. I mean, theek hai. I mean, let it get read. We'll reach 2 minutes late. Who knows? It's better for me, you know. Anyways, it's okay. I mean, you don't have to rush, you know. And I started, you know, spending more time. Who knows? It's a better, the approach of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I just changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. You know, having more patience. Developing a patience is a good way. I mean, you know, I started, even if it was almost, you have chance, I like, let's take it time. No hurry. To develop that attitude, it takes time. You have to do some small things to develop that attitude. And it happens over the time, over the years. So I feel, when you say difficult, right? That is the reason. When you say, oh, getting six-pack abs, it's a lot of elements you have to do. You have to practice. I mean, you have to do training very rigorously for a long time period of time, and then you get it. That's how it's your brain. You're training your brain instead of your abs.
The patience element that you mentioned, I feel like I kind of associate that very strongly to people who meditate and all that. So I've also been trying to meditate for the past few months and all that. Are there any specific practices that you might do, or do you think it's more like self-awareness
on
a day-to-day basis?
Meditation definitely helps. I have not been doing it, but I definitely, it was doing long back, but it helps. It helps you in the way you could focus at one place. So many thoughts running into your head, you could just bring it at one place. It's a starting point, a very good starting point. Other than this, I would say I what I did was, you know, watched a lot of these videos.
TEDx.
I mean, TEDx is just one of few of them. More on this Taoism, philosophy of Taoism, Lao Tzu, and a lot of other, you know, channels where I could, you know, understand other point of views, because it's not just me who is always right. Understanding itself that I am not right and will not be always right is a first stepping stone of you being ready to change yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And when you want to embrace change, you will by default search for such information, right? How could I, you know, become better, let's say, right? Because it definitely helps. Right now I'm more focusing on slowing down things. When I say slowing down, I would say I'm trying not to take more decisions, okay? Doing so many things, oh, going office, then in the evening, going for a party, and oh, doing this, and so many things. I'm keeping it very straightforward. Maybe you can party once in a month. That's something. Or traveling too much. I'm avoiding all that. Very, very slowing down. In fact, doing completely opposite what a rat race of the world might be all about. And the reason why I'm doing it is to just, again, developing those thoughts, developing those, you know, skills, how you can be patient, how you can be mindful, how you can take better decisions. And once that happens, you have your milestones. Because you're focused on one thing so much,
yeah,
you achieved it, you get confident, and now what you said, insecurity goes off, right? So the basic thing is, start slow, right? Start slow. Focus on basic milestones to get achieved. Because at the end, you will be happy once you achieve that, and those milestones will be anchor that I did that. Why can't I do this?
Mm-hmm.
Like when I started off, I was always thinking, hey, since childhood, I know I could do something big. I could start a company. Why not? You know, I came to IMA also, and all that. I mean, you basically reaffirms your brain about, anchor your brain about your achievement, and give confidence that let's take the risk. So yeah, it's similar to that, I feel, you know. So yeah, I mean, I felt rather than focusing, doing too many things, let's do few things in the best way possible.
It's very difficult to, like, I mean, even though you're saying it so, you know, easily, I feel it's very difficult in a sense. And also, the time we are today of productivity porn,
this
where
is,
every
is,
second is important.
This is the problem. I mean, when you say these things, it's difficult, right? You, by default, giving your brain a reason to not do it,
mm-hmm.
right? I know it's difficult. Of course it's difficult. Otherwise, everybody would be doing it. Point itself is, you know, you tend to accept, the point is, you know, where do you start? Of course, you're not giving. The basic problem I felt about not achieving few things are, you set your expectation too high from the beginning, you start and you crumble in the middle. You set your expectation very low in a way where you are like, oh, I achieved this very small milestone. You don't even think about the end goal. Basically, you focus on the first steps. Don't try to see the top. Just take the first step. No need to see the entire staircase. And the word itself will not come to your head. You don't have to think about, oh, let's say if you want to get a good physique, okay, everybody goes to gym and next month, khatam. So, why that happens is a very common thing, you know, because you focus too much on that goal or rather on the process. So rather, if you would have started, yes, first I would be consistent for a month, you know, I don't want any result. Just think about the process. There are two processes. One guy joins who was like straight result chahiye, and he's, you know, giving all the desperate measures in 1 month. Of course, it's a long process. It cannot happen. But 1 month, he just, the whole energy dies down. He started so well. And the other guy start very slowly. Just focus on the process, just getting better. No expectation. First month, he was very slow. Nobody expected. Second month, he's trying to do a little better. Third month, he's slightly better. I mean, he's compounded very slowly, right? Tend to do much better, I feel, and will not give up because the changes. There was a tweet I saw when somebody asked a doctor who was still doing surgeries at age of 98 or something, right? He asked, "What drives you at this age to, you know, do these things still?" He said, "Progress. I'm still making progress. That drives me." So when you make progress, even small, you tend to keep it, you know, on your back and you carry it, keep on doing it. It's easy to do it. So I changed same way. This is I stopped doing it. That's why I'm saying slowing down things, because I knew that, you know, setting unrealistic expectations just exhausts you. Keep small goals, keep expectations low, make little progress, stay happy with those progress, and just see how you can do a little bit more rather than seeing the goal.
Set low expectations and try to overshoot, maybe.
Is that right? I mean, I would say, thinking in a way, ki, let's say if a guy could do this in 1 month, let's say maybe in the worst case, I'm not that better, I would not be dedicated, I would do it in, let's say, 1.5 months. That's how you start. Rather than thinking, he did it in 1 month, I will do it in 15 days. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because there comes the demotivation. So you set the bar like that. Giving yourself, giving your mind, giving your body a good amount of, a little dose of motivation. Oh, I did. I mean, that's why some people are saying, you know, the good thing about being pessimistic is either you know what is going to happen or you are getting surprises.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There is nothing like that. There's no other thing. But being optimistic, you will feel bad because you never expected that. But it's being a pessimist. It's not going to happen. You either knew it because you were pessimist or you were getting surprises. So I never thought about it, but it's a good thing, no?
You're already prepared for the worst case scenario.
Exactly.
You're already prepared.
Yeah.
So going back to the aspect of starting companies with friends, and you obviously touched on, one of the pros is disagreement is easier. This depends on the friend circle as well. Are there any other pros and cons of starting businesses with close friends, maybe?
I mean, see, whatever experience I had before that, also I tried doing with few friends, but it never, kicked off because we all were very laid back. Theek hai, we will do it. You need somebody who is driving also. Some people, people are very, if other person is your friend who is, you know he's your friend, he wants to do few things, you can't say no. There is a problem also there, when you are being with a close friend, you cannot say no to few things what he is doing, and it just goes in a very comfy way. That what happened with when I was we didn't even start, just forget about, we just purchased some domain, etc., and we never started. So I feel it's easier. You can trust them a lot. That is a good part, because you are your friends. Other than your close friend, if you've started, it takes time, of course, to
just build that trust.
So I feel there is a difference. But both that possible. ऐसा नहीं है कि देर आर प्रोज एंड कॉन्स बोथ. आई मीन हु नोज, योर फ्रेंड एंड्स अप विद समथिंग, यू नो ही इज नॉट, ही स्टार्ट्स स्टॉप फीलिंग अबाउट द थिंग दैट यू आर डूइंग टुगेदर स्ट्रांगली एंड ही जस्ट यू नो लीव. सो देर आर लॉट ऑफ थिंग्स. सो आई कॉन्ट से दिस इज वेरी गुड, दिस इज बैड. आई डोंट फील दैट वे.
So if we look at Finchot's chapter 1 and Ditto's chapter 2, what is the difference between these chapters in the sense, how have you approached Ditto differently than, let's say, Finchot's? Any contrast that you see, some consciously made decisions differently from Finchot's?
Finchot is, we have always seen like an NGO. Ditto, we always saw it like our money-making arm. Not just money-making arm, I mean, of course, I mean, see, with Finchot, we never made money. Ditto, as these helps us to sustain all the expenses that we are doing, right? So that is a big difference with that. And you tend to get focused with a revenue-making stream a lot, right? So that's what happens with Ditto and Finchot. We sometimes say, okay, oh, it's like another stepchild. But yeah, I mean, back then when we started Finchot's, you know, we didn't have anything in our hand. We didn't do something big back till then. I mean, it was not famous when we started Finchot's. After that, it became slightly getting popular, right? With Ditto, we already have trust built over with Finchot. People knew us, right? We have an audience. We could launch it. So, and it was a complete different ball game. Ditto, for the Ditto to run, you have to hire people, more advisors you have to hire. So it was a very different experience because you have to do hiring, you have to hire ops people, you have to hire marketing people, you have to hire advisory and lot of bunch of other departments, right? Quality, etc. So it was a very different experience. Finchot was just you know, I mean, few people just running the show. I mean, 4 to 5 people running the show, and you just have to, like, somebody writing, you have to just tie up with few here and there partners so that it could spread the news more. But yeah, it was pretty simple.
Does it surprise you that Finchot's, as big as it is run by such few number of people? I mean,
no, it doesn't surprise me because we have, I mean, it definitely surprises other people that is just run by like 4 to 5 handful of people.
Yeah.
But we have seen that for 3 to 4 years, my friend Shreit used to, not 3 to 4 years, I think 2.5 years, he alone used to run the entire Finchot's. He alone used to write. Nobody else was writing. We never had a writer. He alone used to write, and maybe, you know, rest of us used to post it on LinkedIn or tie up with, like, I used to tie up with colleges, etc. You know, some these kind of partnership kind of thing we used to do. So hardly we were able to run Finchot in just 3 to 4 people. Imagine that.
I think this aspect of like small teams making large impact.
Small teams. So I was recently listening to Sam Altman. He was saying a very good point, right? You know, small teams, highly motivated with the, you know, goal, tend to definitely outperform a larger team.
Yeah.
There is a high amount of trust. There is less communication gaps. You know, it's easy to navigate things, projects. Everybody is here. You can talk to them directly, right? So small teams definitely makes a bigger impact. I could definitely say that.
And I think OpenAI itself is like, I think only 300, 350 people, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah.
It's amazing what they've built. I think it's a $90 billion startup right now.
Yeah, it's huge.
And it's 350 people, I think, yeah. Is there a time, I mean, do you feel tired? Like, I mean, you know, you've been involved, I think, like you said, 5 years. Two startups.
No.
Does it get tiring?
No. That is, again, I would tell you, I mean, you just need to see, I mean, see, when it will get tiring. When you know the destination, right? When you know the destination, as in when you just think about destination, right? It was never like this for me. There was no destination. I was not doing startup to make money or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do some big, few big things in life. I wanted to do something new things. Exciting things, you know, something that could, you know, give me confidence as well. I could learn something new, right? So when you have that in mind, right, you're more focused on the process, or you can say more focused on the journey. You know, when I say this, it means, you know, there is a saying that safar ka maza lijiye.
Okay.
Right.
I thought you were going to say safar ka phal meetha hota hai.
Nahi. सफ़र का मज़ा लीजिए. वैन यू से मंजिल में क्या रखा है, तो व्हेन यू वांट, अगेन आई एम सेइंग, व्हेन यू, व्हेन डू यू फील दैट, अरे यार आई वांट टू गेट सिक्स पैक एब्स, आई एम नॉट गेटिंग इट, यू फील सो टायर्ड व्हेन यू डोंट हैव दैट गोल ओनली, यू विल नेवर फील टायर्ड. माई होल थॉट प्रोसेस इज आई एम ग्रोइंग एंड मेच्योरिंग एवरी डे इन डे आउट, लर्निंग समथिंग न्यू. मे बी इट्स फ्रॉम ऑप्स एंगल, मे बी फ्रॉम मार्केटिंग एंगल, मे बी फ्रॉम हायरिंग एंगल. इफ फॉर मी इट्स मोर लाइक लर्निंग स्कूल, आई एम लर्निंग समथिंग. यू विल नेवर फील टायर्ड विद दैट. एंड आई एज अ फाउंडर, इफ यू आस्क मी, आई वुड, देर वॉज नेवर अ डे आई फेल्ट यू आई कॉन्ट डू, देर इज नेवर अ डे. इवन इफ यू लॉस्ट लॉट ऑफ थिंग्स, यू आर लाइक इट्स ओके, इट हैपन्स, दैट्स अ पार्ट ऑफ द प्रोसेस. सो फ्रॉम आउटसाइड आई अंडरस्टैंड वाई दिस क्वेश्चन कम्स, बट द लॉजिक इज सिंपल. यू फोकस ऑन राइट थिंग्स, ऑटोमेटिकली दोज फीलिंग्स विल गेट अवे. यू सेड दैट अगेन, आई विल गेट बैक टू दैट डॉक्टर बिकॉज आई एम मेकिंग प्रोग्रेस, आई एम नॉट फीलिंग टायर्ड.
That's a very strong mentality, though. I mean, still making progress at like 98. Reminds me of Warren Buffett as well, you know. I think 90.
Yeah, everybody, I think that's how it works. It's a state of mind. You have to have a state of mind.
Let's take a 2 minute break if you don't mind.
Yeah.
In terms of starting off, looking back, would you advise or would you think it's better to probably gain a lot of corporate exposure first and then startup, or do you think it's better to do it right off college?
I mean, see, there is no such thing as this is good, this is bad with this question. There are pros and cons for both of it. What matters for starting up is you figured out something that you want to do, you know, you want to build a product that solves a problem that, you know, nobody is trying to do. Or let's say, when I say nobody's trying to do, it's a very subjective statement. It doesn't need to be like that way. You want to build it, let's say it's, people are doing it, but not that the way you want it. I mean, right? Like we are doing Ditto. I mean, people are selling insurance, right? We are just trying to do it in a different way, or even the same way you want to do a business, let's say, right? So whatever gives you that state of mind, if after corporate you want to have some, like before coming to this, I would just mention one thing. I always tell people that, you know, whenever you want to start up, have a 2 year financial plan beforehand. You have to have that money in the bank account, because otherwise you will just get stressed if the money is not there, if you want to do it. If that corporate thing gives you that enough cushion after working, that is one. Or if you're working somewhere you have never planned, but you know, touched upon an idea that you feel very excited about, and then when you want to do it, but still plan your finances and then do it. Right off the bat, if you want to start, you are well off. You have some, you know, things planned up. Money is not something that will stop you or something like that, right? Or you have figured out some grants, etc. You can start it. All it matters, when do you want to start? Right? It's not this is better or that is better. That's what I want to say.
Another aspect related to this is building in Bangalore. What made you come to Bangalore, and how have you found Bangalore, building in Bangalore for the past 5 years? I don't know.
No, we were 1 year in Ahmedabad. I am Ahmedabad. We started from our college right after graduation. So there you cannot find a good talent, of course, techies, etc. You cannot find. You have to come to Bangalore. We shifted because our investor Zerodha was here, so we thought it would be better. It was not something that it was needed, but we thought Bangalore is the best place for getting good talent. You know, you could hire people, and a good weather, of course, place to be, a happening place to be, right? For networking, etc. Everybody who wants to do a startup, you know, Silicon Valley of India, right? So that was a thought. And Bangalore has been pretty kind, pretty good. Even the traffic, you know, I don't complain about it. I have embraced it. So yeah, I mean, I like the place, you know. There are good quality people here, you know. You can exchange ideas on network well, and yeah, hiring people has been very good. Easily, we've managed to get good talent here, rather than asking people to come to Ahmedabad.
So talent is like the biggest, probably the biggest attraction. Is it talent that make maybe money later on?
Talent, I would say. See, a lot of people, you know, are here, right? Let's say if you want to, let's say raise a fund also, let's say in future, right, with anyone. Some people would have their office in Bangalore, most of the people, and they
Yeah.
will be ready to meet also, right? So yeah, I mean that was a primary reason.
Going back to our earlier discussion on money, I think when startups, when people think of startups, generally what people think of, in my opinion, is like, you know, huge valuations, let's say, you know, $3 billion company,
mm-hmm.
and this guy's worth $100 million, and that
mm-hmm.
guy's worth $100 million. It seems, I feel it is kind of seen like a shortcut to wealth. Is that fair? Is there like a lot of money to be made in startups? Is that an optimal route to making money?
See, I mean, to be honest, I never saw this like that way. I feel most of the people see valuation as, or this company is going to get successful because they have this valuation. They are not going to fail. I don't know how, I mean, maybe some people would see it like that. Of course, by raising funds also people make money. Me personally, I would have, when I was also searching for people to join, when I was alone and wanted to search for my co-founders, I had this one thing very clear in my head. I would not onboard anyone who talks about exits, who talks about, you know, getting rich quickly, etc. I felt that would be a bad choice because they will not, again, you're just seeing the destination, and startups is a very tough battle, I would say. You have to, there will be ups and downs, there will be extremely stressful moments, right? So I never saw it like that way. Valuations are also very subjective, right? What, you know, people are, group of people, you know, want to, TK, I mean, it depends on the revenue and multiples, etc., a lot of other things. But yeah, I never saw it in terms of, you know, shortcut to wealth, etc. If you are doing good, more people will be interested to, you know, invest. We never raised money in terms of like that way. The only money we ever raised was from Zerodha. So, and, you know, we have always stayed away from this conventional way of valuations, etc., you know. So yeah, and we don't want to get into that. Of course, if you make it big, somebody would like to put a value onto it, of course, right? You would do a ESOP buyback, etc. So for that purposes, it's fine. And for that reason, I would say yes, it's fair. But yeah, too much noise just on valuation without any fundamentals. You've seen what is happening now, so.
How has it been for you, like dealing with investors, or maybe, I don't know, any experiences with?
I have, to be honest, we have been reached out by a lot of people, but we have been not very, we never wanted funds, so we were okay with how our relationship and the way our, you know, interactions evolved with Zerodha. Our DNAs are almost same. The way we want to build, we see huge sync with Zerodha. So yeah, we never felt like raising also, so we never reached any investors. We were always kind of, you can say, with Ditto, we were always almost made profit always. So yeah, so we never thought of reaching out to any investors. So there was no such thing as a relationship with, the only investors are always good, of course.
But can you walk us through that reasoning though, in the sense that, like, I feel anyone you meet generally wants to raise more money or wants to raise funds immediately. But you seem to be taking like a different approach. Is that because you just want to grow slowly, or is there no rush that you're feeling? How do you think about that?
I feel, you know, it's we don't want to rush. That's the one thing. And the major reason is we don't want to dilute our freedom. I mean, because if you, you know, raise some fund, you take that money in, now you're obligated to give some return and exit to that investor. In that obligation, you have to do a lot of things that might not be right for the customers or the way you want. But just because you're obligated, you have to do a few things that is not right.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be in that situation. That's the only reason. We just want to build it how the way we feel, the pace at which we want to build. And we are happy with that.
What does your schedule look like on a day-to-day basis?
So I wake up at 5 a.m. Okay. And I go for a workout. 5:30. I come back around 7. I you know, do my breakfast, etc. Get ready, reach office by 8ish, 8:15.
Okay, that's early. Okay.
Yeah, and I finish office by 6. I come home, have my dinner before 6:30 almost, and go for a walk. Then maybe come, I have 2-3 hours spare, I watch something and then sleep.
Okay.
5-10 actually.
What do you do during the weekends?
Initially I was, doing some outing, etc. But now I mostly spend time learning new stuff. So I'm cutting down on a few things. So I'm just focusing on learning more stuff. So I see weekends are a very good, time to learn new things, because like weekdays is just packed with, even weekends, some of the other thing happens, but I generally don't schedule any meeting for my office work on weekends. So you get time extra to learn something on a personal level. So that's what I do. I mostly learn or read something.
What are you learning or doing right now? Is there any activity that you're taking away from?
I mean, last few months I've spent learning about wars, Second World Wars, what strategies, these generals use. I mean, it's pretty interesting. I was watching these Nazi Germany's strategies of, Blitzkrieg strategy, that Hans Gudenier, I forgot the name exactly, how this Battle of Stalingrad happened, what exactly happened, it's more about, not strategies, it's more about, logistics during wars, like people, when you talk about war, you talk about how many tanks, how many missiles, so when you go there and see the basic things, like what happened in the Russian-Ukraine war, is the tanks, etc., need some basic maintenance, and that was not even done. So mm-hmm. half of the tank, they have to leave it like that because of the breakdown, and that created such a big, big disaster. So wars was, we just think war in terms of number of tanks, but they were not doing the basic things also, which is a part of logistics. So how do you, when you see wars, you again say, hey, he has this, this country has these many nuclear warheads, they will just throw it, and this thing. But when you go there, the lot of, it's just not about missiles. I mean, if, let's say even if you have a long range or short range missile, it's also about, when you do your front line, you're doing a war, let's say you're going a front line, you just see these people have so many soldiers, they'll just, I'm talking about those era when you don't have these many missiles also. It tend to see that you have more soldiers, you will win. It's not like that, because it's just, you're saying it's a war of attrition, but no. How fastly you, because see, frontline is expanding. How fastly you transfer your resources, because frontline also need food. Frontline will also need to sleep, right? How do you transfer those logistics? How do you plan for it? So that there is so much detailing. So it's, I found it very interesting. So yeah.
Are you thinking that in the sense that for like maybe application of that in business as well, or do you think
there are a lot of, yeah, I mean, I learned a lot of new things with that. I mean, focusing on the right things is so much important rather than just focusing on the noise. I mean, it's very important. I mean, I've learned a lot of new things with that, like in our business we are just talking about customer acquisition, or let's say marketing, we will do mix these kind of ads, let's say. But when you go back and you just see here, what are we providing? We're providing a customer an advice on a call. Is that advice accurate in the sense, can we do better at it? Can we provide those resources to those advisors so well that our advisory becomes even more lucrative? And people like it so much. Thinking on the detailing level, rather than just going, oh, I'll make a good marketing idea, marketing post, and we'll get so many users. Users you get is fine, but what happens to those users after a while?
Mm-hmm.
Getting into those details, right? You can draw analogy, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of analogy you can draw from this. I just watch this for, I won't say I would watch to gain some business ideas out of it. I watch it because I liked, it was interesting for me. I mean, it was, I felt, oh, that's what happened in those times. This is how war used to fight. What happened in this Ukraine, Russia? I was like, every day I used to question, who is winning Russia-Ukraine war? I search news for some article, I don't know. Then I'm like, what could be happening? Then you go there, deep there, then you understand. So basically for my personal enlightening also, I do that. When I come across a question, right? So yeah, a lot of other things. I watch a lot of fitness related stuff as well.
Really?
So recently I was started following this guy Mike Manzer, who's very popular back in those days. A lot of other things, I mean, not just related to, I mean, how does, so I also started watching this, the videos of human anatomy,
okay.
Related to medical science, how body works. It's very, 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 very interesting. How nerves work.
On YouTube?
Yeah, everything is on YouTube. How nerves work, how your heart works, you know, what exactly happens with the food you eat, you know. Why your body needs, you know, air, breathing, why it breathes. All these kind of questions, right?
You know, this reminds me of sometimes at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. even I go into YouTube and...
Don't go at that time. I don't go. It's my weekend thing. I do it on weekend or when I get some free time at my office.
Mm-hmm.
I watch all these things. I like... It helps me gain new knowledge. And I really like learning, keeping myself updated or learning new stuff.
I have this very bad habit of like maybe at midnight I'll start wondering how does Golden Gate Bridge work and you know what is the engineering behind this thing.
That also I watch. So I follow this channel, The Engineering Marvels, where I wanted to know how Panama Canal works.
Correct.
How it was made.
Correct.
Suez Canal was made, how Suez Canal was. Then again in the Suez Canal when I was learning that I saw okay how Britishers and Egyptians were almost at the brink of a war, you know. Then somehow it was averted by United Nations, etc. So yeah, a lot of things. Suez Canal was owned by Britishers, I guess, initially, but...
I think so. I mean, you immediately feel so much smarter after watching those videos. So it was a hit for me. Like,
Panama Canal was a bit interesting. I mean, back in those days, it was an engineering marvel. Till now also, it's a very engineering... Because the problem with Panama Canal was, I mean, you know...
Panama is the one in Latin America, no?
So... The problem with Panama Canal was so basic simple thinking. Now when you see the map, right, you see okay the ships want shorter routes, right? You can just, this is a smaller land, I can see in the map, they can just destroy it with all the bombs and this space will be open and any ships can go. That's a basic I used to think like this cartoonish way. After that I figured that out, like, you know, I mean, you cannot just nuclear bomb or use the other, what kind of bombs you will use? You know, there are huge masses of land. So back in those days, there was no nuclear bomb for sure, Panama time, 1913 or something is that. So what they were doing, they sent a lot of men to dug, remove those pieces of land. Everybody was contributing, France, everyone in US, etc. But the biggest problem was, majority of the workers were dying of mosquito bites or dengue, malaria, etc.
Uh-huh.
So many people died dugging that piece of land, they stopped. Then the American civil engineers came up with this idea. There is no need to dug those lands and just meet this thing. What they will do is, there is a river crossing, okay. They will dug the basic land here, okay. They will flood this area, okay. And then what they do, basically there's a chamber, there's gates, there are five gates, okay. Now the river is here at the top, okay. Now their plan was to completely remove this and join these two, right. But what they did, they say it's not impossible for us because so many workers were dying. So the idea is to lift the ship from level A to this level 5. So what they did, instead of, you know, there is no way you can do it in the normal way, right? Because you have to dug it, otherwise make the water level same. So they made 5 gates. First gate, once the ship enters, right, the back of the gate will close. They will open the second gate and both gates will become at the same level. The ship will enter again. The gate 2 will close. Again, the gate 3 will open. The water will get at the same level. Ship will elevate.
Oh.
And that's how they rose that ship to the level of 5. And then again at the end, they will again lower in the same fashion. Level 1, level 2, level 3, and the ship will pass from the Panama.
That's what happens in Panama Canal.
Exactly, that's what happens. Nobody.
I did not know this. I thought they were just passing.
No. A lot of people think that it's not. There are gates. It opens, the levels become same, then it goes ahead.
But that should be a logistical nightmare. I mean, because of the time taken by one ship to do that.
They have made it, I mean, fairly efficiently. I mean, they have done it way, way better now. I mean, it's not this thing, but yeah, I mean, that's how it works. I mean, you can check it, it's an engineering marvel.
I really did not know that. Okay, I think I have to watch one video.
Yeah,
What publications do you read? Are there any publications that you read every day or
No. Just randomly something pops up. Philosophical stuff I sometimes like reading, sometimes if I like it. But yeah, I never finish books.
Okay. Is there something you're excited about for the next 5 years?
Oh, maybe, you know, would like to see company grow a bit more.
Ditto?
Yeah, I mean, this will be exciting. Of course, it will grow, become a bit a bigger brand than it is. Maybe some at a higher, some higher level. That's what definitely will excite me. Rest, I would definitely try out new things which I have not done till now. Maybe something, living few years outside the country, etc. Something like that. Right.
Where do you plan to? Any thoughts?
I haven't thought. Anywhere. I just feel like, you know, away from the hustle and bustle.
On that note, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you.